Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood.
On Tuesdays, get your pop culture news and reviews with a pure Bostonian perspective on the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then on Thursdays, you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, presenting the Live Issues program.
It's going down each week. Only in the land of Ash, nerdcore at its finest.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Boston Bastard Brigade's One-on-One. On this episode, we take it to the expo floor for this year's Boston Festival of Indie Games, which happened this past Saturday at MIT. Now, before we start the show, a few things. First and foremost, a most awesome thank you to Panda Lucius for helping out with a good chunk of these interviews. In fact, you can most definitely call this a true Land of Esh collaboration. Secondly, a huge fist pump to everyone working at Boston Fig this year. I gotta tell you, this was a flawless convention. I can't even think of a single negative thing to say about it. It was that great. I highly recommend everyone checking it out next year. Third, much love to the Wicked Anime crew for tagging along and doing some great video recording. Be sure to check out their YouTube page to see when their Boston Fig special airs. Lastly, to every game developer there, be it digital or tabletop, you put so much heart into your work, and it really showed. I seriously think that the future of all gaming is in great hands if you are the folks behind it. An incredible strong showing, especially in the tabletop section. This is the first time I've actually played a card game there that was so awesome that I bought it instantly. That's when you know you have a hit on your hands, folks. Make a game so damn good that people will buy it right on the spot. Now, this episode of One-on-One will feature interviews with the folks at Duodicus, I hope I'm saying that right. If I'm not, I apologize. Team Future, DFL Games, Barbaric Softworks, and Games by Playdate. All great developers making something, as the Aquabats would put it, super rad. So let's not waste any more time and jump into this Boston Fig edition of One on One. We are coming here at the Duodicus booth at Boston Festival of Indie Games, and I'm here with Redbeard, who is showing off the game Moriarty's Machinations. How do you pronounce it?
It's pretty close. Moriarty's Machinations.
Machinations. So, welcome to B3 Crew. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm getting excited. It's early in the day, but it's going to be a long day with a lot of talking to people.
Yeah. So, tell us a little bit about your company.
So, my company is basically me. I founded it about a year ago to try to get, you know, Moriarty's Machinations out the door. The reason you do a company is, you know, varied, but, you know, so this is the only game for the company, and I'm trying to get it out the door. Hopefully, if this goes well, I can have lots more games and bring, you know, lots more fun to lots of people.
How did this even come about in your brain? Like, what made you think that this tabletop was the best way to do your game?
So I've played a lot of Hidden Roles games, and one thing that I found lacking so it gets a little repetitive over time because you don't necessarily have unique roles, or if you have unique roles, you don't have, like, the deduction thing's a little clunky. So my game tries to make that really clever in that the crew selection mechanic is very strategic. You start off the game with lots of options, but every option you take eliminates many more options. So by the end of the game, you're struggling to be like, oh, well, I really should have thought of that, you know, earlier. It's a Sherlock Holmes-themed game, which is, if you're going to have a party deduction game, like, why isn't there one about Sherlock Holmes? Like, really? Like, come on. So, that's why I did it. So I was going to make one. It's going to be Sherlock Holmes-themed.
Are there any board games out there that you are, like, drawing inspiration from? Because the deduction part and the trying to figure out who's who kind of reminds me of Scotland Yard, if you've ever played that.
I've not played Scotland Yard specifically, but Mafia and Werewolf are in the same vein. There's also a game called Resistance and Avalon. It's kind of similar, too. But
I'm a big fan of Werewolf, so I did like that little.
Yeah, but this game is the next generation of that. It takes it to the extreme. It takes all the good things about Mafia, Werewolf, stuff like that, and puts them all into one game.
So explain to our listeners, how do you play this game?
So you start off with a card that says who you are. Throughout the game, you're trying to figure out who everyone else is through a series of heists that are planned. The cops are trying to foil the heist, and the robbers are trying to, you know, not have the heist foiled because they just want to do a dishonest day's work. At the end of the game, Jack the Ripper is trying to murder Sherlock Holmes, and Inspector Lestrade is trying to arrest Professor Moriarty. So the murdering and, you know, arresting, it trumps all the heists in the beginning. So it's all about figuring out who's who, and it's the heist's kind of secondary to that.
All right, so which, like, Sherlock Holmes stories have you drawn a lot of your inspiration for when it comes to the creation of this game?
So the number one story is The Final Problem, which is set in 1891, which is sort of an alternate universe setting of this game. So in that game, Sherlock Holmes and Fritz Moriarty supposedly go over the falls in Rickenbach Falls in Germany. This game is set, you know, just prior to that, or sort of an alternate universe version of that, where Sherlock and Moriarty are going after each other, and Sherlock doesn't necessarily win this one. Maybe Sherlock gets murdered, depending on how they outwit each other. So it's just sort of like living that story for reals.
Excellent. How many people can play this game, and like, what's the setup like?
So it's 5 to 10 people. You need at least 5 people, but it can go all the way up to 10.
Wow.
You start with a card that says you are, and each number of players is specifically designed with certain roles so that it's maximizing your fun. After that, people get to select which crews they want to go on heists. And if a cop get on the heist, then they can foil the heist. But if it's just robbers, then they won't necessarily foil it. You're going to a certain number of points, because you get points for each heist gone. And if it's foiled, it goes to the cops. If it's not foiled, it goes to the robbers. At the end of the game, Jack the Ripper, like I said, is trying to figure out who Moriarty is. Or is trying to figure out who Sherlock is. And Inspector Lestrade is trying to guess who Moriarty is. If they guess correctly, then they win for their team, no matter what else. If they tie on guesses, like for instance, they both guess correctly or they both guess wrong, then it goes based on the points from the heist. The full rules of the game are actually online at my site, dewadacoast.com, so you can check out the entire rules there, including, you know, all sorts of resources for it.
Now, you said this game was on Kickstarter.
Yep.
When did that start up, and how long is your Kickstarter running for?
So it's on Kickstarter as of last Friday, September 5th, and it's going until October 13th. So it's already at 30%, so it's getting there. Hopefully it'll be there.
Well, great. I mean, I had a great time playing it. It was a great start to BFIG, for one.
Absolutely. Great game. I wish you nothing but success. But maybe the final question I want to ask him is, who's your favorite portrayal of Sherlock Holmes and of Moriarty?
That is tricky. I do kind of like the more recent ones. Wasn't a big fan of Moriarty in the more recent ones, but Sherlock, the most recent one, I think was really good. My favorite Moriarty, again, probably fairly recent. I don't know why, I just don't like the older ones as much. The Game of Shadows was my favorite portrayal of Moriarty, because it was very, very reserved, very like, oh, well, I'm just like a big badass.
That guy was great.
Yeah, he was fantastic. But Redbeard, thank you so much for joining us here on B3 Crew. And where can people find out more information on your game?
So there's links to everything on my site, dewadacoast.com, as well as the Kickstarter. Just look for Moriarty's Machinations on Kickstarter and you'll find it. So.
Excellent. Thank you again, and best of luck for the rest of Boston Fig.
I'm contributing to the Kickstarter.
I think I will too.
Thank you.
Why be sweet? Why be careful? Why be kind? A man has only one thing on his mind. Why ask politely? Why go lightly? Why say please? They only want to get you on your knees. There's a few things that I never could believe.
Okay, I'm over by the Black Hat Oculus booth. I'm here with Nick Garzin, who has helped create this game. Welcome to B3 Crew. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. How about you?
I'm doing very well. So tell us a little bit about your developing company, first off.
Sure. So our group is Team Future. We've worked together on various small projects in the past, but we got started on this one at the most recent Global Game Jam in January.
Black Hat Oculus, it's a game for the Oculus Rift. Like, what inspired you to create a game like this?
So, a large inspiration of this is we wanted to make something for the Oculus Rift. We had borrowed one and we knew that it's such a cool new technology, we wanted to give it a shot. Besides that, the theme of the jam was something like what we see is not what we see, but who we are. So we wanted to do something with the two players playing together, but each seeing very different things. The big inspiration for this game was the scene in The Matrix where Neo's being guided through the office by Morpheus and just telling himself, like, hey, duck behind there, guys are coming from there. And we thought that was very cool to have one person being able to see everything and one person being able to see, like, hardly anything.
That's awesome, because there's two different ways to play it. First off, you have the you're behind the computer doing the whole thing, like you're Morpheus of sorts. And then the other player is wearing the Oculus in the whole three-dimensional thing. And it's a really cool, very immersive world that you've created with this game.
Yeah, and it's sort of seeming like even when you're playing like other games and there's like AI characters telling you stuff where they seem to have all the information, and you inside the game are pretty limited. So we really tried to go for that throughout the thing. So there's things that you just have no idea that are coming that you really can't get around unless your friend or whoever you're playing with is doing a good job of watching out for you and guiding you through.
Really cool. So what is like the main objective of Black Hat Oculus? What is the overall goal that you're trying to achieve in it?
So there's sort of two objectives whenever you're playing a level. The main objective is to just escape from the level. There's some levels that really emphasize that are sort of themed on prison breaks and stuff like that. As you're going along, you're trying to gather as much loot that's spread out through the level that you can find. And then there's also just kind of interesting spaces to kind of explore and look around. So some of it's sort of like pushing the limit on like how dangerous you want to get while you're going through this versus just speed running through. So it's up to those two players to decide like how much they want to do.
So currently you have it set as a two-player game. Have you ever thought about expanding it more to like a four-person thing where two people are in the VR world and the other two people are helping them out?
Yeah, it's something we've considered, and if our Kickstarter that we're running right now goes well, it's something that we might look at, because we've thought about it'd be really cool if it's not just one cooperative pair, but maybe like two cooperative pairs that are competing against each other, or overhead players that, you know, maybe they're not on the same side as the Oculus player and they're trying to misguide them at certain points. So that I think there's definitely potential for going beyond the two players, but it's something that we'd have to see if we can get the support needed to expand on it to that extent.
And are you thinking of other ideas for like game modes to put into it as well?
I think for right now we're mostly looking at the exploration and this kind of like standard game mode. What we'd like to do if we're going to expand on it more, I think, is add more features. So we've been adding new things like password insertion points, jammer spaces, sound-sensitive enemies. You know, we're looking at other senses that enemies can maybe be based off of. But I think the main thing we'd want to do is kind of like expand on this gameplay mode with new mechanics.
That's excellent. So where can people find out more information on Black Hat Oculus?
So if people go to blackhatoculus.com, they'll be taken to either to our homepage or to our Kickstarter page, depending on when they're listening to this. And the Kickstarter page gives them all the information about the game and future plans for it and what we're just trying to do with it at this moment.
Now, this might have been the question I should have started off with first, but where does the name Black Hat come from?
Black Hat is sort of like a hacker kind of rank. Usually, like, they're sort of like thought of like as the evil hackers, you know, versus like a white hat hacker who's trying to improve things. So this whole narrative is these two people kind of exploring these spaces. One being like kind of in there in the hacker space, and the other one guiding them through, like in sort of like the sort of like cyberpunk style of hacking.
That is awesome. So for all of our listeners out there who want to check out this game, go to blackhatoculus.com. Is that where people can find a Kickstarter as well?
Yes, they'll find either be a link there or send directly to it.
And how's that going so far?
So far, we launched 48 hours ago about, and we're about a third of the way to our goal.
Already? That's great.
Yeah, and our goal is currently 4,200, but we're mostly just trying to get Unity Pro licenses so that we can smooth out the development process.
All right, so you're looking for something like a PC, Mac, Linux sort of thing that you're hoping to release it on?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Nick, thank you so much for joining me here on B3 Crew, and best of luck for the rest of Boston Festival of Indie Games, man.
Yeah, thank you so much. You have a good day.
You too. I'm here with Lindsay from DFL Games, who are showing off henchmen. Quite a crime spree of a game, if I may say so myself. Welcome to Boston Bastard Brigade. How are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm doing good. I'm holding up. It's been a long day, but it's been very busy, really exciting.
Yeah.
We've been showing off the game a lot. Huge crowd, so
yeah,
very
we're,
happy.
We're at the tail end of the show. It's going to be shutting down within the next 30, 40 minutes. How has the audience participation been? How have been people been liking it?
How's the traffic been?
Absolutely incredible. I mean, we've had a full table all day as far as demos going. We've had lines waiting for people to come sit down and play. So yeah, it's been rampant. It's been great.
Well, let me tell you something. I feel like this is the first year where I've come to a Boston Festival of Indie Games, and it's 3 year time, of course, where there's a much bigger crowd for the tabletop games than there is for the digital games.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think of something like that?
I'm really impressed, actually. Last year, I actually didn't get a chance to view the digital showcase, but just speaking in terms from the tabletop, it's been so much better this year. There's a lot of space. It's laid out beautifully. They did a really, really great job. So I'm appreciating the nod to tabletop.
Absolutely. So tell us about the creation of Henchmen. How did it come to be?
Absolutely. So that was Dan Lanza, the other half of DFL Games, created the game because we're both very big action movie and comic book fans. And it's kind of funny how henchmen are treated in all the media, how they're just so expendable, and oftentimes the superhero just goes straight for the boss, but the boss ends up living. So he made a game based off of the perspective of that. He did all of the art on MS Paint, which kind of gave it this comic book recurring theme. And it's been in playtest. It's less than a year old, so we're pretty proud of it. It's almost close to production, so we're excited.
It's fantastic. So for our listeners, tell us about the game. How do you play it, and what are some of the strategies that help you to hopefully win at this game?
Sure. So from a tactical standpoint, it is technically a pool building and resource management game. There is a job board of five jobs. Each job has a different requirement for how many henchmen it requires for cash payout. And once you complete a job with your team of henchmen, the job is shuffled back into the deck and a new one is replaced. However, sometimes that job is not a job and it is a super jerk. And that locks down that job spot so that a job cannot be put on that board anymore, and it also kills half of the henchmen in the thug life. If someone fails a job or does not complete a job, you have to tell the boss, and that issues a table-wide punishment. There are also loot cards that you use strategically to either increase your henchmen and make jobs easier for yourself, or on the flip side, make jobs harder and kind of mess with other people. And then once all five jobs are locked down by the super jerk, the game is over, and the player with the most cash wins.
Cool. So, from the people who've played, because, I mean, we played earlier, and right off the bat, you could tell that everyone kind of put their game faces on. You know, competitiveness was, like, at an all-time high. I think we had two kids at our table who were just were ready for blood. Like, have you seen that happen with all the other people who have come to play your game today?
Absolutely. Even if it's not right away in the first round, once you get through one round and people get the hang of it, that's when the claws come out, and it's great. That's what really makes games fun, is when you're really competing.
It's like when you have all these supervillains coming together, and they can't really trust one another, honestly.
Absolutely. So the co-op part of the game is really cool because you get to join up with one person to pool your resources to complete a job. But that in itself kind of creates a little angst on the table, so you have to be careful with who you team up with, who you don't team up with. And if that job goes south, both of you are held accountable. So it's a fun dynamic.
I also saw that there you have a little setup for people to create their own henchmen.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Sure, yeah. So we have, part of our expansion pack is going to be a package of cards you can purchase yourself. That'll be blank so you can draw your own henchmen and include them in your own personal game. But we also have 8.5 by 11 sheets of the template for blank henchmen, and we're encouraging people to take them and draw their own and tweet them at DFL Games, DFL_games on Twitter. And we're going to pick some good ones and contact you and see if you're cool with letting us put it in the game. We're not sure how exactly we're going to handle that, but it's going to happen.
I feel like that's a really good way to let your fan base be included in the game process. I mean, I know I have a piece of paper in my backpack. I am going to make one as soon as I get home.
That's awesome. I'm really excited.
So how far along are you in production of this game? I know you haven't officially released it yet. Do you have a set release date for it?
We do not. We're currently waiting on some quotes from manufacturers. We are looking to launch a Kickstarter within a week. Hopefully, give or take a little time. Kind of depends on a couple of things. But hopefully once we get those quotes done and our Kickstarter funded, hopefully we'll have those games in the hands of people as soon as possible.
Ooh, I can't wait. One last question for me. So I know that during the punishment rounds, when no one completes a job or not everyone completes a job, a boss card comes out. What has been the favorite boss card to be played today?
My personal favorite is the card that requires you to say, "I'm a pretty girl," before each action, because that just makes it a lot of fun. There are definitely people who don't want to say it, especially when we were like recording. They were like, "I'm a pretty girl," and then you just make fun of them, and it's just a lot of fun. Another favorite is the talk like a pirate. So you have to talk like a pirate for every card you interact with.
That doesn't sound like a punishment.
No. Well, some people might be like, "I really just want to play the game. I don't really want to do this."
You know what? We call those people losers.
The punishment really comes is if you don't do it, you forget, you have to kill a henchman. So, yeah, you got to really kind of be on top of everything.
Absolutely. So, for people who want to find out more information on henchmen, where's the best place they can check it out?
DFLgames.net. We're all over social media as well, DFL_games on Twitter, DFL_games on Instagram, and then also we have a henchman-specific page on Facebook.
Excellent. Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us here on this Boston Bass Brigade and Electric Sisterhood co-production podcast show, Henchmen. For the love of God, please check this game out. It is a lot of fun.
It's so worth it. It's so worth it.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm over here by the Barbaric Softworks table at the Boston Festival of Indie Games, and I am with Sam, who is showing off a game that I remember from last year, Blocks of Explosive Dismemberment. Welcome to the Boston Bash Brigade. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well.
So, as I mentioned, I saw this game last year. Didn't get a chance to play it because there were a lot of people that time around trying it out. So, how has the game changed since last year's Boston Fig?
Well, a big important thing is that now, when a player is trapped in an enclosed space, instead of just staying there until something happens, they die horribly. Trash compactor style.
Yeah. So for our listeners out there, Blocks of Explosive Dismemberment, it's a bit of like a survival version of Tetris from the pits of hell. Is that a good like description of it?
That's a great description of it.
So, for our listeners, like how would you describe the gameplay aspect of it?
It is a two-player game where one player plays a falling shape puzzle, and the other player runs around inside of that puzzle in 3D and tries not to be crushed to death horribly, smashing blocks, getting power-ups.
So, where did the idea for this game come from?
I first started thinking about it after I read a XKCD comic about Evil Tetris. This is very different from the XKCD version of Evil Tetris, but it just got me thinking of ways to make arcade games evil.
We have this one mode right here. This is like the main mode of the game. Are there any other styles of Blocks of Explosive Dismemberment that you are working on right now?
Right now, I'm just focusing on this main gameplay mode, this one-on-one asymmetrical mode. I mean, down the road, there could be a lot of different things. There could be multiple players jumping around for their lives inside one puzzle game, and I think that could be very interesting.
Very cool. So, I noticed that you have it on Kickstarter, correct? Like, so how far along are you guys with this Kickstarter?
Well, we haven't actually started the Kickstarter yet. We will in the future. I sort of made these promotional materials, then decided to wait until the game was a little more polished before I really wanted to put it out there on that.
Right, I completely. Yeah, that's fairly understandable. So, how far along has the game production been going?
I would call it alpha. It is. It needs to have true online multiplayer added in. That's a big thing. Right now, it's local. You can play it with two computers, but no online.
So hopefully that'll come in the very near future, though.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
So for all of our listeners out there who want to find out more information on Blocks of Explosive Dismemberment, where's the best place for them to check it out?
Well, there's the website, barbaricsoftworks.com. You can also check us out on Facebook. Just look for Barbaric Softworks. And The Twitter is at Blocks of Death.
Excellent. Sam, thank you so much for joining us here on One-on-One, and I hope the rest of your Festival of Indie Games is as fun as it's been so far.
Thank you.
We're here with Glenn Given, the tabletop manager of the Boston Festival of Indie Games, and he has his own little card game that he's showing up here called, what's it called again?
It's called Slash Romance Without Boundaries.
Sorry about that. I like blanked out for like a quick second. That rarely ever happens. But let me tell you something, Glenn. We spent, what, the last 70 minutes playing this game, and we're loving it.
How did this even happen? Tell us about the birthing process in your brain.
So, in 2013, I rented out a house for PAX East, which is a giant festival in Boston that's run by the Penny Arcade people.
Yeah, we go there every year.
Okay, yep. Good. It was with my World of Warcraft guildmates. And we're big fans of all types of games. Video games, tabletop games, party games, and story games. Story games, by that I mean games like Fiasco or Our Last Best Hope, where you're collaboratively creating a narrative. And party games like, charades and apples to apples and things like that. And so we wanted to create a middle ground between those two. We wanted something that had the staying power of a story game, but was in a digestible chunk. So we came up with this idea of Slash. I love reading really bizarre fan fiction on the internet.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, so, I mean, my desktop background might be Marceline and Princess Bubblegum from Adventure Time, but I...
Well, they said it's officially a thing.
Okay, yeah, I'm super happy about that. Like, I love that stuff. I love the insane creativity of it all, and trying to capture that in the form of a game seemed really perfect. So 2013, we're renting out this house. We're all hanging out there for the entire week, which is so much cheaper than you think. And I was working at a printer, a newspaper printer and a short-run printer for a while. So we kind of came up with this game about how do you create random Flash fictions? How do you create random fan fictions? We came up with this huge list of different characters. I drove from Boston back to New Hampshire, where I live. And literally overnight before PAX East 2013 started, I printed out an entire deck of these cards, drove back, took it to PAX, played it with people. I had 6 people try and buy our only copy while we were playing it, and 3 different lawyers tell me that I was a madman for doing it. But it was not, I mean, I just put the ink on the paper. It's not my baby, per se. So we did that. Flash forward 6 months later, I quit my job of 10 years. I'm a person who has 2 dogs, 2 kids, and a wife. Mm-hmm. So that was wildly irresponsible of me.
Yeah.
But when you're working 60 hours a week and you want to die every single day,
something's not right.
So I quit to make games for a living. And I'm really happy to say that right now I get to do that. I make this game Slash, which is about creating improvisational party fan fiction, and I've probably gotten wildly off base from what your question was.
No, that's totally fine, dude, because, you know what, going off base is all about the fun of Slash, because you don't know what kind of, like, couples you're going to be able to create.
You don't know what kind of question you're going to get asked, and you don't know what you're going to come up with on the fly.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know, I have a very loud agenda when it comes to games, and when it comes to selecting games for Boston Festival of Indie Games, which is that I want to angrily enforce diversity, because I think it makes a better atmosphere.
You know, agreed.
If all of your games are made by and for straight white men, you are only going to get straight white men games. And if you want to go to a party that's just full of straight white men, I don't know, what's the non-pejorative way of saying it, but that's super gay. Like, I want to go to a party with everyone of different colors, of different orientations, who have different ideas, because that's how I'm going to get to experience new things. And that's what we've tried to do with selecting the games here. These are all great games, but they display a variety of approaches to what games mean.
I mean, look at it out there, because we are standing, watching the stadium seats and just seeing different people from different places, different races,
I mean,
different...
I can see a table that doesn't have anyone sitting at it. So, like, people are interested in the games that you have presented to everyone. So I think you're on the right track.
Thank you. Right, and we spent a number of weeks doing playtesting, writing up feedback reports of it. You know, and there are a lot of games we got. We got more than double what is presented here. That were just not quite done or not in a position that could be presented. It's not to say that they were bad. I think there's a lot of games that submitted. You know, one of my conceptually favorite games that didn't pass muster was a game called War of the Hoses. War of the Hoses is a two-player tactical war game about two teams of elementary school kids having a water balloon fight.
Okay. I like the concept.
That is interesting.
It's so good. It has some interesting mechanics to it, but it doesn't click in a way that works. And, you know, it has some problems, but God damn it, I love the ramshackle, like, energy behind it all. But when it came down to it, I needed everyone who is presenting a game here to be able to sit at a table and not get stumped. You know, I need people to be able to sit and play, because that's what's going to make these games work.
Right. You don't want someone to be sitting at a table for 20 minutes and still be going, I have no idea what the hell I'm doing.
Yeah. And, you know, as a designer and as someone who's had to make their living doing design, I think that if you're a creator, I applaud you. But don't forget, this isn't just artistic frippery. You need to make a product. You need to, like,
you
everything.
You have to have a proper function.
Yeah.
You need to have it be accessible to the masses.
Well, not only do you have to have a market, but you need to consider, what does it cost to make the game that I'm making? How much is it going to cost me to get it to people? Like, if I make a game that puts me in the red after I've sold all of it, is that a success? I mean, maybe it is. Maybe there's an artistic success to it. But I would like to have a world where people could make games and earn money doing it, as opposed to going broke doing it because they love it.
Exactly.
It takes a lot of effort and a lot of work. And
beautifully said.
Yes, you want them to make games, love it, and be successful with it, and be able to be financially stable with it, too.
Yeah, I mean, you don't
it
have to
make...
It
should be a real job, not a dream job.
Yeah, it should be something that by engaging in it, it supports your engagement in it. Like, this isn't what I do full time. I'm a teamster, right? But I just choose to lose sleep and do this as well. So, like, I've decided to have two full time jobs and a family, and two dogs who won't stop. But
ever.
Yeah, but I'm only going to get one go around, so, you know, I'm going to feel not happy if 10 years go by and I haven't made a bunch of games. Like, I challenge people to do the same thing. It's not impossible. There's resources out there. Maybe you have an idea for a game and you're not the best artist, but I bet you know someone who's pretty goddamn good. Mm-hmm. And so get your shit together. Let's organize and make something. Sorry for cursing.
No. Boston Bastard Brigade encourages the act of swearing.
All right, fuck that noise.
Okay. Going back to your game.
Sorry.
I just want to know, because, I mean, this is your baby. This has you written all over it.
Okay, this is not...
you and your guildmates.
I have a game that's all me, but this is not it.
But out of everything that you've played, when you've played Slash...
Yeah.
What is the best pairing that you've heard?
Oh, that's easy. So my favorite pairing is one of the very first ones that convinced me that this is a game worth quitting my job over, which is Bumblebee the Transformer and Draco Malfoy.
Okay.
So the idea, and this is one of the good things about that I like about Slash and making it accessible, is that it while the name Slash conjures up a lot of erotic fan fiction, it doesn't always have to be that.
Or the guitarist from Guns N' Roses.
Or the guitarist from Guns N' Roses, who should really be in the game.
Which has his own Slash fanfiction, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Slash?
Yeah.
So,
Gunter Slash.
One of the earliest pairings in the game was Draco Malfoy and Bumblebee, and we imagined the story where Draco has been so ostracized by the rest of Hogwarts because of his, like, dark allegiances that he has to run away from it in very, like, kind of catcher-in-the-rye sense. He comes upon this old beat-up car that he is able to use his magic to get working, and it turns out that it is Bumblebee. And they have kind of like a Thelma and Louise relationship. It's not sexual. It's not about any of that. That being said, also Luke Skywalker and Thing from the Addams Family. Just because of the...
Yeah,
exactly. That's also one of my favorites. But
that's really good.
That's amazing. That's
really good. We've had a lot of really good pairings to it, but more than just picking, like, character A and character B would be really hot in bed with each other. I really enjoy challenging people to create stories on the fly and make up, like, ridiculous scenarios.
All right, so we turned your favorite most creative pairing, but what has been your favorite creative story when it comes, like the, what's the question? What was, like, the...
Oh, okay. So it's another Star Wars one. So I was at the, what was cutely referred to as the diversity gulag of Penny Arcade PAX Expo 2014. It was actually really good. They did a really good job. Mm-hmm. Showing off Slash, and someone played Darth Vader, and they said, I want to know, they were playing in hardcore mode, I want to know how your character broke up with Darth Vader and lived.
Ooh. Right.
And so a number of characters went around where it's like, oh, Daryl Dixon went out and he, like, shot him in the head with a crossbow and stuff like that. But the winning character was Princess Leia. And
okay.
So the story was that over breakfast, they had a horrible unspoken moment of realization. And the breakup was mutual and never spoken of again.
Until that very moment in the card game.
Yeah, exactly. Where they're like, that was horribly wrong and I need to escape.
I can only imagine, like, the tea cups, like, chattering. And like that, oh my god, what am I doing here? Look on her face.
Just, like, avoiding eye contact and just being like, oh,
like,
what has happened? I can't believe I drank all of that. My life would have been better if I had never known.
And I feel like the punchline to that would be the Aristocrats.
Ah, yeah. I think that's the only... Where else are you going to go with that story?
So let me ask you, are there any plans for expansions? Because I know you spoke of maybe a couple. The Blacks.
Yeah, so we've got a couple things. Well, so games I played, we make a bunch of different games. Our ethos in games is that we want games that are fun to play, which seems basic, but there's a lot of games here that are very good that when you go and watch people play, they don't look like they're having any fun. You go by a table playing Slash and they're loud and they're laughing and they're having a good time. Same thing with other games, Pack the Pack. Not so much with Bad Habit, which is a game about people cutting themselves. It's a serious game. But for Slash, we have a couple expansions. We just got our printer proofs back for blank cards, which is something people have been clamoring for, which is the ability to add their own characters to the game or themselves. I used to be in the very first prototype version of this game. And that was... There was also a girl that I had a crush on who was in the game. Anyway, it got really dark. So I went through some serious shit. But also, our first expansion, tentatively, is going to be called Aliens and Androids. And is all different types of semi-robotic characters or characters who are out of this world.
I hope you get 7 of 9. That's all I'm going to say.
I want to say 7 of 9 is already in that deck.
I hope.
Oh, okay.
Okay, good.
It's a surprisingly wide array of different characters. But that's what we're doing. Our approach to expansions is to not say, like, oh, these are all Marvel characters because that'll get the shit suit out of me. But to say, you know, these are all heroes, or these are all villains, or these are all damsels, or these are all heroines, or whatever. Like, group things in that way, alliteratively, so that marketing-wise, it sells a little better. But, like, that's kind of our approach here, to expand it that way. And always include the ability for people to create and add to the game.
Excellent. Thank you. So for people who are interested in finding out more information on Slash, where would you take them?
Okay, you can go to slashcg.com. gamesbyplaydate.com if you want to order it directly. You can find out more about what we're doing at gamesbyplaydate.com. You can also hit us on Twitter at gamesbyplaydate. It's mainly me retweeting feminist and liberal propaganda and making kind of horrible jokes. But I'm directly reachable there. It's supposed to stand for everyone in the company, but they've kind of given up on it.
They're giving you your soapbox.
Yes.
Yeah, because I don't have enough.
Well, dude, listen. This is a fantastic game.
Thank you.
Panelicious and I have already bought a copy of this game.
The minute we walked by, I was like, what's this game about? Oh, take my money. No, play it. No, I'm going to buy it regardless.
No, play it anyway.
It's done. But now
that's the other thing. If you go to /CG.com, you can, and that's /CG.com, not only can you buy the game there, but if you don't have the money for it, you can download the whole thing for free and print it out yourself.
Excellent. Like,
and actually, everything Games by Playdate does is all Creative Commons licensed. If you like my games, I want you to play them because there is no amount of money, and these aren't, I'm sorry, not my games, if you like our games, the company's games, I want you to go out and play them and share them with people because that is the best form of advertising that I could ever purchase. So please, go, print it out, share it, have fun with it, and yeah.
Let your minds go wild.
Dude, thank you so much for joining us here on Boston Bass Brigade and, of course, Electric Sisterhood, because with Pandalicious here, I feel like it should be a collaborative podcast.
It's always a collaborative effort with you.
And listen, listeners, go out and purchase this game, one of the most fun card games I've ever come across.
Thank you.
This was my favorite today, hands down.
You can go vote for it.
I will.
Because I'm involved in the festival, I get no financial reward if I win, but I get to feel like I'm better than everyone. Yeah.
That your game is awesome.
Yes.
What kind of feeling?